Stephen Kubacki mysteriously vanished in Michigan. That wasn't the end of his story, though. Almost a year later, he reappeared close to 1,000 miles away in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. We discovered last episode that Stephen's disappearance isn't an isolated incident. The area in which he vanished is also known as the Michigan Triangle. Much like the Bermuda Triangle, this Midwest hotspot is home to various stories of odd and unexplainable, well, X-File-esque happenings. But there are other stories similar to Stephen's, one in which the victims and their families weren't as fortunate. They were never seen or heard from again. In this episode, I want to specifically talk about the people who disappeared out of other triangles around the country. Because yes, there are multiple. The question is, are they somehow connected? Hey guys, welcome back to a brand new episode of the Haunted Detective Podcast. I'm your least favorite host, Kelsey Childs, but nobody ever has called me the paranormal Sherlock Holmes.
Well, that was a depressing fucking intro.
That's what I'm here for.
Well, then I'm the least favorite skeptic, Pamela J.
No.
And,
no. No.
Yeah. Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
We're even. We're doing this as a team.
Fine.
If you're least favorite, then I'm least favorite.
That's so sweet. If you're getting bullied, I'm getting bullied.
Yes. Real friends get bullied together. That's how it should be. Damn it.
Yeah. Real friends also play video games with each other.
I'm trying.
Shut up. Just do your intro. Just do your intro.
And
okay?
I'm Pamela J, and I'm going to sit over here.
Where is here?
Ohio.
If not on my lap.
If not on my lap, then where?
I actually, yeah. Triangles, ghost ships, ghost planes, ghost people.
Ghost people. Wow. I'm loving it. However,
my love life.
last episode was weird, I have to say. Talking about the whole like underwater Stonehenge and the freaking ships that never came back up. And the captain actually bothers me. That sunk.
I didn't know that ships went down and they came back up.
They like to submarine sometimes. They resurface from time to time. I'm sleepy. Anyway, so the thing is I keep thinking about the captain.
Yes. George R. Donner.
Yes. He very much racked my brain forever.
He racked your brain?
The story racked my brain. Why would he be able to rack my brain?
You said he racked my brain.
Yeah, like he racked my brain as in like I don't know how he friggin' vanished.
I don't think that's the right use of the word. The
term. It's probably not. But I'm not here to teach people how to talk. Don't do as I do.
Don't do as I say.
Don't, you know what? I am so fucking done with talking. Just go on. Just go.
No. Tell me more about how the captain racked your brain.
I'm tired.
Like a rack of ribs?
Look,
rack
everyone, of ribs? Everyone that's listening, I'm tired.
It's like a rack of ribs.
A rack of ribs.
Anyways, he racked your brain. Go on.
Is the pizza. All I was saying is that I don't understand how he just vanished. And I don't know how, because there was no portholes. And if there weren't anything that was like, there wasn't anything big enough for him to fit through. And there was just not, like, I don't know, like someone had to have seen where he went. Because I don't think he could just disappear like that.
He did. Door locked behind him.
But it was also the 1600s. So like, maybe
it was
someone...
not. It was the 1800s.
Oh, I thought it was
1600s. I think it was actually the 1900s, actually.
Wait, really?
Hold on.
I'm pretty sure this was 1600s. Like 90% sure.
They did not have ice ships in the 1600s.
Yeah, I swear.
The Lagrathon.
I swore it was 16.
1937.
What the fuck? Yeah. And then what happened in the 1600s?
Like loads of stuff.
Oh, Jesus. My segment. This is a bad segment for Pam today. Anyway, okay. Regardless of what year it happened, it still confuses me.
Well, you know what is even more interesting? I learned from a friend, Brooke, who I know through work. She was telling me, because she lives in Michigan, that there were UFO sightings by the Coast Guard and they made an official report about it.
Stop it.
Mm. You believe now?
No.
Why?
Why would I believe it in the Coast Guard just making a little report on some UFOs? It's probably a really big frisbee.
Okay, Scully.
A drone, if you must.
No, I'm literally Mulder and you're Scully. But I'm not impregnating you. Like in the show.
You didn't have to add that part. We could have left it alone. But you went in for it. This is why everyone thinks that we're so weird. It's because of this.
Our editor is listening to this. Like, oh my God. Hi, Chris. Sorry, Chris. Pamela, it's time to open the case file.
What the fuck? Oh my God. Did you leave it in the zombie cage?
God, dude, I'm sorry.
You know you can't leave it with Martha.
I literally gave it to Martha to put on your desk. I did not say put it in the zombie cage.
Dude,
you have to go get it.
I have to go get it?
Yeah, you have to go get it.
Oh, God. It's going to bite me.
You have to go get it.
I don't want to
just go. No, you're fine. No, you're fine.
Fine.
Go get it.
Okay. Hi, zombie. Stop it. I need it. Stop it. I need it. Stop. Martha, you're fired. Okay. I'm getting it. I got it. Okay, I got it. We're good.
Did you get bit?
I did, but I already chopped my arm off, so we're fine.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I didn't really like my ring finger on there anyway.
Possibly one of my favorite places to discuss is the Bennington Triangle. The stories there make my head spin. The area of Bennington was settled around the 1800s and was known as the town of Glastonbury. It was first a lumber and mining community until the 1880s, when all of the natural resources were used up and the land left bare. They attempted to bring tourists to the area, but a flood came and thwarted their efforts. Mother Nature was really like, no, bitch. Nope.
No, thank you.
In 1937, the town was only inhabited by 16 people, which consisted of 4 families, and by the time Bennington was settled, Glastonbury had become a ghost town. It seems as if something was warding people away from Glastonbury Mountain. I think that's a fair assumption, a normal assumption to come to, right?
I mean, something was definitely making them not want to stay, or maybe someone. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little person, maybe evil person. No.
Okay. No. Uno reverse.
Fine.
We'll start with the weirdest story and work our way down from there. On December 1st, 1949, James Tedford, also known as William, boarded a Greyhound bus. He was heading home after visiting relatives in St. Albans, Vermont. The bus made one stop right before breaching the line of the Bennington Triangle. The bus driver and passengers all confirmed that James didn't leave his seat for the entirety of the stop and was still there when the doors finally closed and they started moving again. Despite this, as the bus entered the triangle along Route 9, Tedford seemingly disappeared out of his seat. As I like to say, he blipped out of existence.
Blipped. He blipped out of existence.
He blipped out of existence.
But also, how?
His seat was still warm from where he sat minutes earlier, and his personal belongings were still aboard. Sound familiar?
I mean, yes.
The captain?
Yes. But that doesn't make sense, though.
It like doesn't.
He was just there 1 minute and someone blinked and then he was gone?
Yes, precisely.
Okay.
Never been seen again.
That makes a lot of sense.
His wife also disappeared.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, no, that doesn't make sense either.
Like a year earlier from their home. Just gone.
Were they involved in anything? Like...
No.
No? Nothing?
Just a
nothing?
Normal dude.
Well, that doesn't... Did they have kids or any other family?
They had family.
But like... Kids. They just were
there one second, gone the next. Yeah.
Okay. Did anything come from those cases? Like anything?
No. Nothing.
Oh. Well, all right, this is pretty dead end then. I guess I'll move on.
Now that you all have an idea of what makes the Bennington Triangle so enticing, we should rewind and start at the beginning, back to the very first documented disappearance. It was 1945 when Mitty Rivers, an experienced hunting guide and outdoorsman, took a party of four hunters out to an area around Glastonbury Mountain known as Hell Hollow. Mitty's career as a guide meant that he knew the woods better than the back of his own hand. It was familiar and homely territory that he was used to navigating, and the chances of him losing his way was like 0.00001%, non-existent. Yeah. Because those woods aren't very big. I mean, the thing with Connecticut and New York and, you know, there are state forests, but they always lead somewhere. And there are markings and trail markers. And even if you're off trail, it always leads somewhere. And if you know the woods as well as Mitty did.
Yeah. Which, I mean, especially if he's an expert or at least a very experienced hunter or hiker or anything of that sort, mm-hmm. then he probably knew the area extremely well and probably knew it enough that if he were to get lost, he could find his way out.
But while leading the group back, he got lost, in quotes. After a large search party was conducted, he was officially declared missing. The only evidence found was his rifle cartridge in the stream. Sound familiar? Like Steven? Are these starting to seem like the freckles on your back when someone draws lines between them?
They seem a little coincidence.
A coincidence.
Well, that's fair, I think. But, I don't know. I just think that there's something odd. I mean, there is something odd, obviously, but I don't think that they're connected. For them to all be connected, it seems too perfect. A little too perfect. But for them to all have never been seen again, that's pretty scary.
Well, Paula Weldon's disappearance in the Triangle is also bizarre, considering that it happened exactly 3 years to the day before Tedford did.
Hmm.
She was 18 years old and studying at Bennington College. On December 1st, 1946, she decided to go for a hike on the Long Trail. Yes, that's literally what it was called.
The Long Trail. Oh, wait. Yes, I remember this.
The same area that Mitty disappeared from. She wasn't wearing a jacket, only a red parka. By nightfall, the weather dropped from 50 degrees to 9. She was seen by multiple people as her bright red outfit was very recognizable. The last people to see her was an elderly couple walking 100 yards behind. Paula rounded a corner and within seconds, she was gone, red parka and all. There was an extensive search and a huge reward, $5,000. They offered people in the search party who found her or anyone who knew anything. And that's what, 1946, so $5,000.
Yeah, that would have been a lot of money.
$84,000, about.
Jeez. That's... So is this Paula Jean Weldon?
Yeah, she was... She's usually depicted as, like, a little Red Riding Hood.
Okay. Because I covered her case a hot minute ago. I think it was a couple years. But I remember there being a lot of... Like, they had named a couple suspects. I think they even tried to, like, they investigated her family, too, I think. But there was...
I mean, She was just gone.
Yeah. Well, it was. Yeah. They just didn't know. I remember. Yeah, that was it. I remember that they just didn't know where to, like, they didn't know anything. It was just very confusing and a mystery. So five people went missing from that same exact area.
Hey, don't give it away.
Oh, sorry. I just was reading the title of something. My bad.
Next, we have Paul Jepson. He was 8 years old when he went with his mother in the family truck to feed some pigs on October 12th, 1950. His mother left him in the truck for about an hour. When she returned, he was gone. Even though he was wearing a bright red coat, there was no sign of him. The jacket should have made him more visible among the trees. And I will say, this has to be one of the most mundane of the disappearances, even though it is a kid. You know, she left him in a car.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, times were different back then, so we had different etiquette.
There was different things.
I guess.
There weren't even seat belts back then. There was no, like, laws of, like, making your child be in, like, a car seat at a certain time. There wasn't even seat belts. Like, there was some crazy stuff, like, back in, like, the 40s and 50s and all that fun jazz.
16 days after the disappearance of Paul, Frida and her family were camping near the Somerset River. Her and her cousin, Herbert Elsner, went for a hike. After a mere half mile, Frida had a minor fall into a stream. She told her cousin that he should wait for her while she went back to her tent so that she could change into dry clothes. Frida was never seen again. Never made it back to the campsite. When Herbert asked their family, they confirmed that no one had seen her. Soon a search party was underway, and even though five efforts were made over the course of 2 weeks with aircrafts, helicopters, and ground patrol, there was never any evidence found of where she might have gone.
There's just that's too many people. Like, it makes me think that there's almost like a serial killer or something in the woods just waiting for people and just snatching them up.
Much like the Michigan Triangle where Stephen vanished, there are some overtly strange legends and places surrounding the one in Bennington. For one, the place that mostly everyone vanished from was in close proximity to the Long Trail or Route 9. The deeper I looked into the triangle, the more oddities began to pop up. The indigenous tribes in the area refused to settle or step foot in the woods around Glastonbury Mountain. They believed that it was cursed and that there was a rock that, if stepped on, absorbed people. Of course, there are no records from that time, but it seems as if the indigenous tribes experienced their own rash of disappearances. Why else would they believe there to be such a specific curse and entity plaguing the area?
Honestly, this just sounds like a crazy person is, like, doing this to people. But I guess I could see how, especially, like, 3 years apart, how Paula was 3 years apart from the first guy?
Well, there's no victimology. Mitty is an old man who leads hunters through the woods.
Yeah.
Paula is an 18-year-old girl.
Yeah, like a random college student that was just...
Paul is just an 8-year-old boy. It doesn't make sense. Frida Langer.
Yeah. I mean, could it have just made sense that they got lost? But then again, if they
got
lost
in a bright red coat?
Well, right, but like if they got lost and they were never... My thing is that you don't get lost in the woods, those woods. Because there are some woods that are so thick and so dense and so big that it would be...
Frida was 53, by the way.
Oh, she was?
Yeah, she was not young. She was 53.
Oh.
So again, no rhyme or reason.
Right, but like these aren't massive woods. Like there's much bigger...
No.
Woods that, like, that was my point, is like there's much bigger spaces in which these people could have gotten lost in, and they got lost in these specific woods. These woods are not that big. And my problem is that if there was, for instance, a random killer that was just killing at random, let's say, there would be bodies found. There would be at least articles of clothing or something to indicate that something had happened to them. But there's not. And that's what's really racking my brain, is I don't know how you just poof.
For context, in 2008, Robert Singley, a 27-year-old college student at Bennington, got lost in the same area but was found. So that 2008, right? That's still lack of technology, different. Like, that's not the world we're living in just because it's not the 90s, et cetera, et cetera. They found him. So it's not entirely impossible for someone to be found.
I wonder how they found him, if it was like helicopter or something.
He was found by state police.
Oh. Well, I guess so, it could have been on foot if, you know.
These areas like Vermont, Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, Vermont can have massive woods, but there are little towns everywhere.
And I mean, the park rangers know, they usually, they have like a massive map of like the whole thing. So they know parts in which they could have gotten lost in, or the last place that they're seen, they could probably get a little bit more info and figuring out where they're at.
Okay. Minnie Rivers was 74. Paula Jean Weldon, 18. James Tedford, there's no, he doesn't have an age. He's a veteran. Paul Jepson was 8, and Frida Langer was 53.
Okay, so other than James.
Oh, wait. They found her body.
Who?
Langer's.
Do they know what happened to her body?
On May 12th, 1951, Langer's body was found 3.5 miles from the campsite in the eastern branch of the Deerfield River, an area that had been lightly searched 7 months previously. No cause of death could be determined because of the conditions of her remains. I can only find that happened on Wikipedia, though, which is why I did not have this written. Oh, no, yeah.
Yeah, they did find her body?
Yeah, it's unsolved.
Well, it makes me wonder if she was murdered. But playing devil's advocate here, there would not be a very specific MO if this was a killer of sorts. Plus, we're ranging from the years of
there would
like
be victimology.
Well, it's very sporadic and random.
Unless it's just spree killing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like whoever is in that site, like whoever ends up being there. But being only that one body was found is very weird.
You would think that Mitty would know, right? Mitty Rivers would have suspected something being a hunting guide. He would have seen the same person lurking around.
Or shooting that person. You know, he had a gun with him.
That's the thing, right? Is it's like he was able-bodied. Unless, you know, Mitty had a heart attack, fell into the stream. I don't know, but that's the thing. It wasn't like a river like we have here in Colorado or you have in Ohio. Those are streams. They're not like you fall in and you get washed downstream.
Yeah, I mean, you can drown in like any amount of water, but we're not dealing with drownings because a drowning, there would most likely be a body discovered at some point. So that's my only thing is that, so we have one body discovered and they couldn't identify her cause of death because of the condition of the remains, which could have been either animals or just decomp on its own, but it does make you wonder if maybe there was a psycho in the woods. It's a possibility.
Well, it's the same possibility with Steven, right?
Steven is a very odd case. And the thing is with Steven is that he is very much alive and very much around, and he doesn't remember it, but he did write a book, which if you haven't read it, you should. But we still don't know what happened. We don't know if he hit his head. We don't know what happened. We don't know if he just vanished and then was put somewhere else and then just like resurfaced. But why didn't these people resurface? If the same thing happened to him, why didn't they resurface? So that's my only thing.
Not terribly far from Bennington, there lies a place in Massachusetts, home to bizarre paranormal occurrences. This area isn't home to as many mysterious disappearances, but there are other things that lurk in the woods that might be even more terrifying. As we're looking for a connection between these places and possibly an explanation, it is still important to investigate every triangle and why they are individually feared. It spans around 200 square miles from Rehoboth, Freetown, and Abington, The Bridgewater Triangle is home to a paranormal and cryptid enthusiast stream. It is so notorious that there was even a feature about it on CBS News. And that's saying something. An author, Jeff Bellinger, told WBZ-TV, quote, "The Bridgewater Triangle, I think per square foot, we've got more weirdness here than the Bermuda Triangle could hold a candle to. And the reason, of course, is so much history." Because, you know, the Bermuda Triangle is just ocean, just water, no history.
Yeah, definitely not a well-known triangle, if not the most well-known triangle, because it was featured in Scooby-Doo Pirates Ahoy, which means it's super well-known. I love Scooby-Doo.
That's a big statement to make, considering that the Bermuda Triangle is famous beyond words for being in Scooby-Doo.
It's super famous. It was in Scooby-Doo, like, once, so obviously that means it reached, like, peak fame.
For the disturbing things that have happened within it?
Maybe. Maybe a smidgen bit.
Bellinger recounts his time spent in the woods at Bridgewater and the things that startled him the most. "Even I got spooked when I came across some perfectly picked clean bones in the woods that look like the ribcage of an animal. I believe there's paranormal activity that goes on here, whether it's a vortex or not, I don't know. But I do know the reports come up again and again, and they are from credible sources. It's the past coming to the present, and that happens here. It happens everywhere." On that note, let's get into it.
Let's do it.
The first and most important thing to discuss when it comes to the Bridgewater Triangle is the fact that I called the town archives in Bridgewater.
Did you really?
To get information.
What'd they say?
So it's like the Black Forest, Germany.
Oh,
it's really hard to find information on. So jeez. I found this article that was literally photocopied really poorly and posted on the town archive website, and I couldn't read any of it. So I called them and I was like, hey. And that's how I lived out my Melinda Gordon from Ghost Whisperer fantasy.
Stop.
Is she me or is she my mother? Who even knows?
Maybe it's Maybelline. But also, that's crazy. And also, why can't we just make good photocopies?
Remember the one with the hand on it?
The one with the whole hand in it. I was like, can we please? Who took that photo and was like, yep, that'll do?
Like, good
that's
enough.
Terrible. So bad.
Anyways, what we have to talk about first is the rash of heinous occult-style crimes that plagued the area in the 1970s to early 1980s. It was September 8th, 1978, when 15-year-old Mary Lou Arruda was on her way home from her high school. They found her abandoned bike only a half mile from her house. Even after a week of air and land searches, there was no evidence as to where she went. And then, on November 11th, a young girl's body was found. She was decapitated, badly decomposed, and tied to a tree in the Freetown State Forest. The sight was disturbing, to say the least. By November 29th, James Cater, a sex offender, was arrested for her murder after a positive identification of her body was made through dental records. Disgustingly, James was to be married the day after he so savagely murdered Mary.
What the hell? Why did he do that?
Weird, right?
Was there any, like, what the hell was his reasoning? Did he target her for a specific reason, or was it wrong place, wrong time? Or that's just barbaric to do that to another human being. And the fact that he was about to get married, that's insane. Like, he was about to have a whole ass, like, wife the next day after savagely unaliving that poor girl. Ugh, what a pig.
It was right before Halloween in 1978 when a local 17-year-old was abducted. Lisa Arcudi had run away from her killer barefoot through a Bridgewater field, but her escape attempt didn't work. She was shot four times and killed as the last hit her in the heart.
Oh my God. Is this the same killer?
No.
Oh, this is a different killer?
Mm-hmm. So these are all just like
they happened at the same time?
At the same time, oddly violent for the area.
Okay.
So like it's a suburb.
You said this was like a cult. section, right?
That's how these were described and classified officially in okay. official record.
So are we dealing with a type of satanic panic? Because that was like roughly the same time as satanic panic was 70s and 80s.
Well, it seems as if maybe, and the full moon brings out the worst in the people of Bridgewater. On November 14th, 1978, a gunman held a couple hostage until sunrise. This is noted by an old article as only one example of a rash of crimes, unusually violent crimes that happened on that night.
Are they kind of hinting at that maybe it was like a ritualistic type, or maybe it was they just thought that they did certain things at certain times, like the full moon just made them nuts, or they don't know. They just trying to rationalize insanity, I guess.
Barely a year after Mary was murdered, Diane Dion's body was found. It was January 12th, 1979, when she was abducted. A man jumped into her daughter's car while Diane was waiting for her to finish shopping. He drove off with her in the passenger seat. It only took one day for her body to be discovered. She was burned, quote, beyond recognition in the trunk of a car. Her body was still warm hours later. After they discovered her, three other cars were also found burned in a similar way, but devoid of any dead bodies. The final car they found was a yellow Fiat filled with shotgun pellets. Here's the catch, though. She was the mother-in-law of Police Chief Benton W. Keene, which was specifically noted in. So I'm putting this all in order of this article.
Okay.
That,
yeah.
I think it was written like the 80s after all of this happened. Now we're going to fast forward all the way to 2015. On November 3rd, police received a phone call about a fire next to the MBTA train tracks. When law enforcement officials got there, the discovery they made was gut-wrenching. On fire was the body of 29-year-old New Jersey resident Ashley Bortner, who had been abducted. She was bound and gagged. By the time police put out the fire, 70% of her body was burned. 48-year-old Julian Squires and 50-year-old Fernando Owens have both been arrested on the counts of kidnapping and murder. They were set to be sentenced, and it took decades for them to be sentenced.
It took decades for them to be sentenced?
Yeah, so that happened in 2015. I think they got sentenced in 2023.
You have me so incredibly effed up. How? How? Oh my God. That should not.
I'm sure I have my information.
That should. Oh my.
Yeah, 2023.
So it took them from 2015 to last year, 2023. To sentence them for a kidnapping and murder. That makes no sense. I don't know why it took that long. Why did it take that long? It doesn't need to take that long. Like, just imagine being her family and knowing that those killer, like that, having that case, like, wow, dragging that out for so long. It's like re-traumatizing every time you would like go back to think about it. Cause you're like, oh yeah, we still don't have. Like, they weren't officially sentenced yet, so, like, I guess we're just here. Like, that sucks so much. Oh, my God. I'm glad that they finally got sentenced, but, like, that's so long.
I think they were caught in 2022.
Oh.
It's really not clear. Or in 2016, Fernando Owens was arrested in the Dominican Republic.
Sounds like a pretty messy case.
So he was arrested. One thing says 2016.
Okay.
NBC Boston says 2016. So I'm going to go with that.
2016? Still a long time. Oh, that's awful.
Not only does the Bridgewater Triangle have a slew of weird and oddly occult-style crimes, but the terrifying paranormal aspects surrounding the mystery of this place makes everything we just talked about that much scarier. It's the one place where aliens, monsters, cryptids, ghosts, and demons can be found in such close proximity to each other. This area has been plagued by paranormal anomalies for thousands of years. Imagine driving your car one night, you look out of your window and see a giant black bird with the wingspan of a small plane hovering above the road, staring at you, taunting you. Then suddenly, as soon as it came, it vanishes into thin air. Sightings like this happen all around the triangle, and they aren't exclusive to giant birds. For thousands of years, people have reported seeing hellhounds, giant cats, elusively mythical snakes, aliens, and even Bigfoot. So, let's get into some of these stories.
Not Bigfoot.
When it comes to aliens and UFOs, I'm not a big subscriber to the concept. Do I believe that there's something out there? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I do not think that there are flying saucers in the sky floating around with the sole intention of abducting people and experimenting on them.
Yeah, I feel like if they have that technology of just being able to fly around another planet.
We know they were here.
Then they don't need to cut us open and be like, what's this?
What is happening here?
What's
this? This is a person? This human?
In the air. What's this?
There's blood everywhere.
But like, they don't care. They're not going to care. They're just going to be like, oh, okay, cool.
Well,
look like ants.
My thing is like, why would they implant themselves or like abduct people or like, if they had the technology to travel light years to mm-hmm. another planet and survive in outer space, mm-hmm. we would know they were here. They yeah. wouldn't need to hide. They would just snap their fingers and we'd all be dead, you know?
Yeah. Like, if anything, they're probably like, wow, cool. I'm going on vacation. Yeah, I'm going to people watch in Florida. Like, that would be an alien vacation. Like, they just hover over one state and they just people watch. Just, it's like imagine, like, taking a vacation as like an alien from like, I don't know, Jupiter, I don't know. And they just come over and they're like, well, yeah, I'm going to watch a Daytona MTV spring break. it's really funny. It's a lot of drunk girls. These dudes just play football in sand and it's like, they're really drunk. So they can't like do it right. It's really great. These little humans are really stupid. They're fun to watch. That's all I can think of.
Do we agree on something?
Yeah, I think we do.
Oh my God.
1 point to the 1 point to Gryffindor.
Thanks for coming and listening to the Haunted Detective Podcast.
It's over.
Goodbye.
It's over.
To be fair, I understand the concept and believe that people believe. I know that this is coming from someone who avidly believes in ghosts, demons, portals, and other outlandish stuff. But I attribute a lot of alien sightings to other paranormal phenomena. That goes without saying. This is my personal belief and opinion, but I wanted to put it out there before we discuss the UFO sightings.
Okay.
The sightings aren't a modern day occurrence. Their belief in what they saw is not just a product of popular media. There are reports back from the colonial days of the sky, quote, turning a sulfuric yellow for days at a time. They would call it a yellow day. In more recent times, there have been a lot of sightings of, quote, spook lights. These are seemingly random balls or orbs of light that appear in the sky. The phenomenon was even featured on an episode of The X-Files. People typically see these lights in January next to the Raynham dog track. Then something unexplainable happened to people eating at Joseph's restaurant on Park Street. The power suddenly went out, and as the restaurant was cast into darkness, two large circular imprints were left in the dirt behind. Everyone went home that night feeling as if they were visited by a UFO. Throughout the next few years, there were more than several UFO sightings. Specifically, in 1978 and 1979, when a radio host named Jerry Lopes reportedly saw an unidentified flying object that he claimed was alien. He said that it was shaped like a baseball home plate with red lights on the top and one large white light at the base acting like a high beam. There is a creature called a Thunderbird. As told by the Algonquins and Iroquois people, it would create thunder with the flap of its wings as lightning shot from its eyes. This sacred bird controls the heavens or upper world, while a panther took charge of hell or the underworld. Mm. The lightning bolts were used to attack creatures that crawled out of the underworld or in other regions of the country, underwater spirits. People started seeing these birds in the Bridgewater Triangle.
Okay.
In one instance, in the summer of 1971, a police sergeant named Thomas Downey was driving a back road at 2 a.m. when he came upon a giant winged monster in the road. It was over 6 feet tall with an 8 to 12 foot wingspan. Downey called the sighting in, but by the time his colleagues arrived, the bird was nowhere to be found.
The bird flew away.
Other, quote, beasts have been spotted as well. From giant black panthers, dogs, and even boa constrictors, there would even be police searches for these animals, especially when the local farms started having their livestock mutilated, like something out of a horror movie.
Oh, God. Oh, those poor animals.
It seems like the Bridgewater Triangle always has something interesting going on. Most of these sightings line up perfectly with the local indigenous lore, but really makes you wonder.
Yeah, it makes me wonder that I'm never going to go to Bridgewater ever. You already planned it. Don't worry. Don't twist my arm. I won't go.
There is a lot of information here, and we aren't even talking about the ghosts that haunt both of these locations. So, Stephen, much like many of the disappearances we discussed in this episode, vanished, poof, gone. And all of these weird events took place in triangles. To make it even odder, Stephen reappeared pretty close to the Bridgewater Triangle. I think there's something to be said about the relevance, especially Tedford's case where he vanished from a moving bus. Not all mysterious disappearances occur in triangles, though. Sometimes these cases have no explanation at all. The fact of the matter is that we can't say for sure that Stephen's disappearance had anything to do with the triangle itself. One case that really stands out to me is the Yuba County Five. They vanished under mysterious circumstances, but they were all found dead, other than one. All of the clues point to this case as being relevant, so I think we need to discuss it. Well, folks, that is the end of our episode today.
Wait, what?
Stick around for our... That's all.
Oh,
that's
I it. Thought we were going to... Okay.
No.
Ready to learn about them, but I guess we're going to learn about them next time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, fine.
That's what I do. We are going to close the case file today on Stephen Kubacki. Of course, we always encourage you when we skim through cases to look more into them. Some of them we don't cover out of respect. Some of them we get into the bare bones of the details because it's just painful for the families and the victims and all of that fun stuff. So
we're not trying to be jerks.
We're not trying to be jerks.
We're not jerks.
This was meant to be a paranormal episode. So anyways, don't forget that our episodes come out every Wednesday. I know this one was a little bit late, but Pamela and I are suffering.
Sorry.
From the weight of humanity.
Just really hurting
our backs.
So
we procrastinated.
It's really hurting our backs and shoulders and might need to realign my neck or something, probably.
Something.
Get
a haircut.
Something. Get a haircut.
Dye my hair.
Dye my eyebrows. Get a new makeup palette.
Do something.
Just do something.
But don't forget to rate us 5 stars. Now I'm going to read a review that we got that's really nice.
Oh, yay.
Kana Slane said, I really love this show. I think the cursing is just enough and it's it is not immature, but really shows who you both really are, which is amazing. Blushy face. I love all the new info I learn about and love that you bring other people into your episodes. I also love that you both make sure that the victims are fully acknowledged and you ensure that the information is accurate. I do apologize, by the way, just a quick side note, that I got Frida Langer's story a little bit wrong. So I didn't realize her body had been discovered. So that's my bad.
Well, I think it's just a reminder that some cases that are unsolved, while you're covering the case and you upload the episode or upload a post, new stuff can come out like years later or months later or even days later. It's just always ongoing.
I wrote this episode 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So
a lot can change.
But I also want you guys to know that like we're not exempt from making mistakes.
Mm-mm.
We make mistakes. So that
was
my mistake.
We make a lot of mistakes.
Not a lot of shows do this, or they do not acknowledge the victims and are only focused on the killers. The victims deserve just as much, if not more, attention than the killers. I really love that Kelsey is open about her experiences with the paranormal and how she can see ghosts. As someone who cannot see ghosts, but can sense them and their feelings, it's nice to hear someone else who has a lot of experience but never claims she is an expert. Keep up the great work. Thank
Aww.
You.
So sweet. Love you.
Ha 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 ha. Okay. We love you guys.
Love you.
Goodbye.